1, 2, 3.
You're listening to Sports Talk Chicago with your host, John Zagluhl.
John, I am fantastic. Thank you for having me. You got an awesome voice, man, and that was a terrific intro. You're like a pro's pro.
You know, that was the first time somebody ever said that, John. No, you're the first person to ever say anything like that. That's very interesting.
You got it, John. Anything for a fellow Chicago guy.
Well, what a great question.
That's a great question. Nobody's actually asked me that.
I like it. What a great question. I never heard that before.
Chase Utley is what? You're saying he's not a Hall of Fame candidate?
You know, it's funny. You may be the only person that I've heard make that connection.
Thank you, John, for having me. I'm doing great. By the way, you have an outstanding voice. I'm not sure about your face because I haven't met you, but your voice is great.
You're doing a much better job than I ever did. You've had some heavy hitters guests on too, man, so keep up the good work. But it's good to be with you, and I'm ready to talk sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in to Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zagluhl. Great to have you here. On the Tuesday edition of the program, the Bears are in the playoffs. We'll explain in just a moment. Plus, a brand new interview today with Phil Rogers. He covers baseball for Forbes. We talk with him about the Cubs' supposed rebuild, the White Sox World Series chances, his Baseball Hall of Fame ballot, and a whole lot more. It's a great interview, and it comes your way near the midway point of this show. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluhl. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, you know what to do. Search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. I want to start today with this. Why are we so ungrateful? Why do we find ways week in and week out to criticize a playoff team? Why do many of us not want to see the Bears in the playoffs? I don't get it. I don't understand. I know the Bears have flaws. No question. Quarterback, head coach, GM, personnel. I get it. But I saw a lot of people infuriated about them getting in. Extremely unhappy. They're rooting for a rebuild. They're rooting for tanking. They're rooting to be the New York Jets. And I don't like that. I don't accept that at all. Do you understand how rare this feat is? Seriously, I'm 20 years old. In my entire life, I have 3 memories of the Bears getting in. Super Bowl 2006, kind of remember it. 2010, remember more. 2018, I'll never forget. That's it. This isn't New England. Doesn't happen every year. This is Chicago. When the Bears get in, it's a big deal. 8-8, 12-4, 15-1. Doesn't matter. They're in. It just shocked me the amount of criticism and negativity and hate that went along with the Bears getting in. Yes, they lost to Green Bay. It was a tough game. The defense didn't do anybody any favors. Mitch played okay. Not going to argue with his completion percentage. A lot of the throws were short, but still. You've got people blaming Mitch for the Packers' loss. People neglecting the fact that the Bears gave up a ton of yards defensively and dropped 3 picks. And then on top of it, people unhappy that the Bears got in. What the hell is wrong with you? Sincere question, what's wrong with you? Are you that hard bent on getting Mitch out, getting Nagy and Pace out, that you'd rather see this team just completely stink it up? I didn't hear anyone say anything after the Cubs won the World Series, and they went down each and every year, and people to this day are still complaining that they're rebuilding. Hypocrites. Hypocrites. So the Cubs are a legitimate World Series contender to you, where they stood before the Yu Darvish trade, but you're mad about the Bears getting in, going 8-8. You want a full rebuild there. Give me a break. The Bears have flaws, yes, but they got in for a reason. Oh, it was a new spot just added. Who cares? They're in. They made it. The Washington football team is 7-9. I don't see anybody complaining over there. I don't see people saying, we need a rebuild. This was horrible. No, they're celebrating. Because that's what you're supposed to do when you make the playoffs. Even the Giants, who went 6-10, consider their season a success. No complaining, no rebuild, none of it. But people here are complaining about an 8-8 team getting into the playoffs. Boy, are we entitled. Are we spoiled? Enjoy this. Enjoy it. You know, I've said this before on the program. I'll say it again. Be careful what you wish for. And I mean it in every sense of the word. Be very careful what you wish for. Do you want to be the New York Jets? Sincerely, is that what you want? I know Jets fans personally, and I see them all over Twitter and social media. Every single week, they're clamoring for a loss. Oh, please lose so we can get the number one pick. Is that who you want to be? The Bears are in the playoffs, but that's what some people want. You don't want just mediocre, you want downright awful, right? That's the signal I get. Why? Oh, we need to rebuild, but why? They're in. Enjoy it. Believe me, it's going to end very soon. And the Bears will be back in 5-11, 4-12, 3-13 mode. That won't be fun for anybody. Do we have short-term memory? Are we forgetting what happened before the Matt Nagy era? I think we are. Every single year, mired in mediocrity, head coaching changes, front office changes. Jay Cutler getting hurt. Who's the quarterback going to be? Have we forgotten about that? It seems like it. Because apparently that's what people want. They want those years back. Well, I'm sorry to break the news to you, but you're sure as hell not going to get them. Not this year. They're in. Do you really want to be the New York Jets? Is that what you want? Think long and hard about that team, and about where they are, and about where you want the Bears to be. Why aren't we grateful? Maybe Mitch isn't the guy. Okay, fine. He still wins. He is a winning quarterback. We said that last week. The number one characteristic is winning. You could have all the talent in the world. If you don't win, you mean nothing. Deshaun Watson went 4-12 this year. Good numbers, but did he help his team win? Technically, no. Numbers don't mean everything. If you're a good game manager, if you calm down your team, if there's stability at your position and you play with a cool head, that should be appreciated too. You could throw for 5,000 yards. You could have 50 touchdown passes. If your team is losing, if they can't get into the postseason, it means nothing. We have to acknowledge that.
Yeah, Mitch didn't throw the ball well deep, although he did hit Mooney. Nice pass. Yeah, he had one pick, and everyone's going to argue that somehow that played into the end of the game, played into the game's result, which it didn't. The game was already over. I've already heard it. I've heard people make that case. It's stupid, but whatever. The point is, though, the Bears win under Mitch. I know it really hurts you, but they win under Mitch Trubisky. That's what they do. Look at his record. Wins on a QB stat. Really? You think so? Because to me, it makes a big difference when someone else is in for the Bears besides Mitch. And it's like that for a lot of different quarterbacks in the NFL. Would you rather have Tom Brady play or his backup? Let's compare the records of Tom Brady and his backup. Then tell me, wins mean nothing. They mean something. They do. Maybe not all the way up here. Maybe they're not a big deal, but they mean something. They indicate something. They indicate you're stable. You can help your team win. You make guys around you better. That stuff is indicated with a winning quarterback. Just like the win in baseball. Same thing. People don't understand that, though. They don't want to admit it. That's the one thing that Mitch has going for him, and it kills people. Oh, he can't do this. He's a fraud. He's a fake. He wins. And they still find ways to tear him down. Every week. We see it every single week. It's so old. Stop sipping the delusion. Please. For your own sake. The Bears are in the playoffs. It should be a joyous, happy occasion. They face the Saints, who could be without Alvin Kamara. What if the Bears win? What if they go on a run? What are we going to say then? It's a fluke. Right? Unprecedented, won't happen again. I'm not saying this is going to happen, but if the Bears somehow won the Super Bowl, I guarantee you, there'd be people finding ways to delegitimize it and to kick everybody out. If the Bears win the Super Bowl, how crazy is this? Everyone still might leave. What other organization in the NFL would do that besides the Bears right now? What other fan base would clamor and beg for that besides the Bears right now? Put that into perspective for a second. We're way too harsh on this team. Way too harsh. And it's frustrating. It's frustrating to watch and to see this from people. They got in for a reason. Who cares about the extra playoff spot? The AFC needed it. AFC had a 10-win team miss. The 7-9 Washington football team is happy as could be today. But the Bears, their fan base, everybody involved, is dismayed and bitter. What's wrong with that picture? Think to yourself, when will I see this again? We don't know. It's not like the Cubs where, okay, after 2016, you knew they were getting in. Didn't know how far they would go, but they got in. 2018, 2019, they contended. We knew. We genuinely don't know after this year when the Bears will be in the playoffs again. We don't. No clue. Could be next year, but their schedule looks pretty tough, and who knows who's coming back. So let's cherish this. Let's be happy about it. Let's root for them to win. I know it's going to be hard for a lot of people. Hard to root for Mitch, to root for Nagy and Pace. But it's possible. You could do it. It's not that hard. Do you love the organization more than the personnel within it? Do you love the history of the Bears? Do you love all the greats that played before this current team? If you say yes, then you will be rooting for the Bears on Sunday. And if you say no, then you're not a true fan. Plain and simple. That's the differentiator. Do you support the franchise? Do you like the franchise? Or do you want some personal vendetta to be fulfilled? That's what it comes down to. And unfortunately, a lot of people would love to see that personal vendetta be fulfilled. And if you get it, good for you. I just find it hypocritical. The Cubs were on a downturn for years after the World Series. To this day, people are mad. But with the Bears, they make the playoffs. Rebuild anyway. That's pretty weird, isn't it? Maybe it's only me. I'm delusional anyway, according to a lot of people, when it comes to Trubisky and this team. I'm the one who's in the wrong. Sure. Whatever. Be excited. Be happy about this. I remember 3 playoff appearances in my lifetime. That's it. Some who are older remember the Super Bowl. Good for them. I haven't seen it. I don't know when I'm going to see that, if ever, from the Bears. So I'm going to enjoy the playoff game. I'm going to root for Mitch. I think he's already done enough to earn a 1-year deal next year. He might have done enough to earn a starting spot in a different location next year. I can see it. I believe it. So at this point, he's competing for more money. The incentive is on him. We've said that all year. Mitch has every incentive in the world to succeed. The Saints are banged up. No Kamara as of yet. Drew Brees is old. He's thinking about retirement. He's not going to win a playoff game. He's actually done not too good this year, too. Reminds me of Peyton Manning's last year in the NFL. 9 touchdowns, 18 picks, won the Super Bowl because he was carried by his defense. That's what Drew Brees is right now. Carried by the gadget players around him. Kamara, Hill, Michael Thomas is back, Emmanuel Sanders. That's who he's carried by. The Bears actually could win it. I'm being serious. There are ways in which they could pull it off. But what happens if they win? What happens if they win then lose? We still going to be calling for total rebuild and clean house? Where does it end is my question. If the Bears lose in the Super Bowl, are we still going to be calling for a rebuild? I think we are. I think people are. No one is satisfied with this team. And it just blows my mind. We have no right to be spoiled. Chicago sports fans have no right to be spoiled. It's not like New England. Whatever comes to Chicago should be satisfying enough. The Bears getting in, satisfying. Cubs winning the World Series, satisfying. The White Sox rebuild, satisfying. We should be celebrating. Not tearing this down. Not hoping for a loss. It's just ridiculous. All I have to say is this. Sincerely, be careful what you wish for. You don't know what you're wishing for yet. You're going to see, and you're not going to be too happy. You want to be the Jets? You want to be tanking for Trevor? Is that what you want? Yes, we went 1-15. Perfect. Yes. Rooting for a loss every week? It's going to come in a matter of time. If the Bears rebuild, you will get that for years. So be careful what you wish for. They're in the playoffs. Celebrate. I don't know when they're going to make it again. No clue. Yet to some, it's still not good enough. And I have no answer for those people. I really don't. If you want to be the New York Jets, go root for them. If you want to be 1-15, go become a Jacksonville fan. Go ahead. But don't wish that on a current playoff team. Don't be wishing, oh, this team should have been 2-14. They should have tanked. Everyone needs to go. They're in the damn playoffs. They did something right. There may have been flaws. There may have been hiccups. There may have been problems. But they did something right to be in this position today. That should be celebrated and cherished, not torn down. And I'm sick of seeing it. More to come here on Sports Talk Chicago. My interview with Phil Rogers comes up next, so stay tuned. Hey, do you want to make some money this weekend? What if I told you I could offer you $250 free to bet on any game you want? Here's what you have to do. Go to sportstalkchicago.com/cash. sportstalkchicago.com/cash. You must be 21 plus. You must be an Illinois resident. You can bet $250 free on any game you want for this upcoming weekend. NFL playoffs, Bears Saints going on, college basketball, college football, and the NBA is back too. This is without question the best time to put down some money and get a whole lot more back. Go to sportstalkchicago.com/cash. sportstalkchicago.com/cash. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Sports Talk Chicago. Here with John Zagluel, and we are back and ready for today's special guest. He's a Forbes sports writer, BBWAA member, and a best-selling author. Please welcome Phil Rogers to the program. Phil, it's great to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing very well, John. Thanks for having me.
So, Phil, what was your reaction to the Yu Darvish trade?
I guess I wasn't that surprised they traded him because he is really their most/only marketable commodity at this point. The other guys that are all only 1 year from free agency, that just totally kills your value. And I think probably there's some distrust with the Cubs and Darvish that his health hasn't always been good. He's been inconsistent throughout his career, and that they were trading him at the high point. That said, you know, like everyone else, I was anything but overwhelmed by the return they got. I do think it's easy to undervalue teenage prospects, and I wouldn't be surprised if they got a stud or two in the four minor leaguers from San Diego, but they're so far away.
What's your response to those who say the Cubs made a big mistake with this trade?
If you're a Cub fan, you want the Cubs to win. Are the Cubs better with Darvish? Absolutely they are. So, you know, I don't think you can really push back much against that point. Certainly season ticket holders, people that are invested in the success of the Cubs have to be very, very disillusioned by what's happened over the last, really not just this offseason, but the last two or three years.
Phil Rogers here on Sports Talk Chicago. Phil, will this become a full rebuild for the Cubs, do you think?
It sure looks like it. There's no reason it has to. I mean, if you look at what the Cubs have done to this point and trading Darvish, it couldn't mirror the way the New York Yankees got under the competitive balance tax threshold and rebuilt. That was pre COVID-19 pandemic. And, I don't think we really know the full extent of how the pandemic is going to impact MLB economics. But that said, there was a huge outcry in New York when the Yankees cut their payroll in 2017, 2018. And then you look up, it was probably just a blip on their franchise's history. You know, that they,
continue to have a winning record every year. They continue to have a not just a playoff team, but a team capable of winning the World Series. And the Cubs have a tremendous opportunity if they wanted to reinvest their savings. You know, even if they can't re-sign Javier Baez, there are four other great shortstops that are going to be on the market next year. Nolan Arenado, arguably the best player in baseball, is very likely to opt out of his contract with the Rockies after next season. Outside of the right fielder and his huge contract, the Cubs don't really have much money committed on the books. So, you know, if Tom Ricketts and Jed Hoyer wanted to just totally go back and reinvest the money they have, in the veterans, and in fairness, you know, when you look at Baez, Bryant, Rizzo, all three of those guys' production is going down. It doesn't mean it's always going to go down, but you know, I think Baez's lack of development has been a huge disappointment.
Right.
And you know, ditto Bryant. I mean, nobody would have seen that coming. And last year, Anthony Rizzo couldn't catch up to fastballs, which just I found stunning. Now, I do think last year was the ultimate small sample size year with, you know, guys playing under really difficult circumstances. And I think you're going to find a lot of outlier performances on both sides from 2020 production. But I could see why, you know, the Cubs would not want to give a $250 or a $300 million contract to these guys. But if that's the case, there are plenty of opportunities to reinvest it in other places. I personally love Trevor Story, the Rockies shortstop, who's also a year from free agency. Not a big buzz name, but he's been a huge production guy.
Would you trade Chris Bryant right now?
You know, I think all of those guys, and I've been saying this for a while, I mean, you're at a point where you make a contract offer to see if you can sign them long term. If you know, if you can't sign them on your terms long term, then absolutely. Although trading them is not the only option, because you can still, you know, you can go into next year, try to win, see what happens in the first 4 months of next season. You know, if the season is able to start on time. And then make your decision there based on whether you're going to be a postseason team or not. But if you hang on to them, you still have that opportunity of offering them qualifying offers, which they would probably turn down. And if they did, you know, then you've recouped a pretty nice draft pick back for them. It's not like you've let them walk for quote unquote nothing. And I think their trade value may make the qualifying offer compensation pick as good of a return as you're going to get in a trade.
Let me ask you this. When you look at the Cubs roster right now, is there anyone you would say worth keeping or worth signing to a big-time extension?
Well, I think they quietly made a really smart decision with Kyle Hendricks when they did sign him to the contract extension. I think that was a really smart one. You know, their best player in 2020, their best hitter was Ian Happ. Do I trust Ian Happ? And do I think he's a complete player? No, I don't. but he's a guy that stepped forward last year. You would sign him to, a reasonable extension. But I don't think right now they have anybody that you would absolutely throw a big contract to.
Phil Rogers here on Sports Talk Chicago. Phil, are the White Sox World Series contenders this year?
They certainly could be. The Lance Lynn trade, workhorse starter, the innings that he brings, the fact that they have Michael Kopech as a complete wild card who could wind up the year, as a number one or number two starter in this already really good mix. The lineup is solid. You know, they catch the ball very well. They have good defensive players up the middle. There's very little, you know, they have a manager who knows how to win, how to manage his roster over the regular season to be ready for the postseason. So there's really nothing not to like about the White Sox.
Did you like the La Russa hiring? I know there was a lot of backlash about his legal record and all the off the field stuff, but were you a fan of it when it first was announced?
I would have, if I could have hired AJ Hinch, I would have hired AJ Hinch. He would have been number one on my list.
Okay.
I liked moving on from Ricky Renteria because that would have been the question mark going into next year, is that he's never been a manager that's won. Now, in his defense, he's never really had a roster that was built to win. So, you know, it's a bit of a catch 22 there, but, you know, I did like making the managerial change, especially when there were good options out there, including Hinch. And I like, as far as managing a team, running a team on the field, I do like Tony La Russa. You know, I think people that push back at his age overlook the fact that he invented the way 35-year-old guys are managing now. I mean, you know, Tony, really, when he was with the Oakland A's, when they built that incredible bullpen in the late 80s, early 90s, and he really was doing the platoon left-right matchups, you know, wasn't the first to do it. Gil Hodges did it in 1969 when his Mets beat the Cubs. So, I mean, it's a tough thing to say anybody invented it, but, you know, Tony has an incredibly sharp baseball mind, so... I do like the on-field Tony La Russa hire. I know there's a lot of other stuff that goes into it, and how you value all of that depends on whether you like the hire or not. But, you know, I would have hired A.J. Hinch first. Him aside, I do like the La Russa hire.
What's one need that the White Sox still have to address, in your opinion?
You know, Maybe still another a little more left-handed hitting if they could get it. I'm not sure it's a big need. You know, right now they might have one hitter too many because you would want a left-handed hitting left fielder maybe to play with Adam Engel. You know, but you're going to get overcrowded in a hurry if Andrew Vaughn is the hitter everybody thinks he is. He's going to force his way there quickly. And with Jose Abreu as a first baseman, he's going to wind up as a DH, which means you can't hide Eloy Jimenez's glove at DH. You're going to have to figure out a way to make him a better defensive outfielder. You know, he's actually, for all the grief that Kyle Schwarber caught over the years on the north side, I'm pretty sure from what I've seen with my own eyes, Schwarber has played better in the outfield than Eloy Jimenez. I'm really surprised. Jimenez is an unbelievable hitter, but he just somehow lacks a little grace. It's like even when any of his running, he looks like he's a guy that like a 16-year-old who suddenly shot up to be 6'5" when the year before he was 5'9". And he does it. His body hasn't quite caught up with its own growth or something. There's something with him that is just a tick off in terms of his kinetics, but maybe that is just a question of what a monster he is, and maybe he can grow into that.
Do you think he will? Like, do you think that maybe in 2 or 3 years that problem will be behind him?
Well, I never honestly worry that much about fielding in left field. It's a hitter's position, and you know, if he hits like he hit last year, he seems to have an incredible knack for barreling up the ball. And when he does, it goes a really long way. I do think he works on plate discipline and some of the things that will make him an even better hitter. So ultimately, I think you've throughout the history of baseball, you've always been able to hide a bat in left field, So I would guess with experience, he would get a tick better. And ultimately, it wouldn't really matter unless you're just trying to, get the perfect player and put him out there. But that hasn't happened a whole lot through history in left field.
Phil Rogers still with us on Sports Talk Chicago. Phil, let's talk Hall of Fame news now. What's your ballot look like this year?
Well, people now tell me I'm a small hall guy, which is interesting because when I first started voting in 1995-ish, I voted for more guys than the average ballot. I think, you know, being a Hall of Famer, the bar is tremendously high, and I've always tried to give a benefit of the doubt to people that were kind of on the fence, because when I came in and started voting, there were a lot of guys that would vote for nobody or only one player a year. And I think when I started off voting, I was voting for five or six guys. I was voting for guys like Davey Concepcion and Steve Garvey and people that I could find distinctions for, but they weren't necessarily, you know, they didn't have the 3,000 hits, the 500 homers, the 300 wins, they weren't necessarily easy picks. But what's happened over time as the electorate has changed is there are a lot of guys that think, a lot of voters think, we get to vote for 10, so who are the best 10? And I've never looked at it like that. So coming into this year, I had two holdover guys on my ballot from last year who weren't elected, and those were Curt Schilling and Omar Vizquel. I did decide to vote for both of those guys again, and I added Scott Rolen, who I think the harder I looked at him, the more I think he was a better player than I really realized. And then I also, after looking at him really hard, figured I could find a way to vote for the guy I really wanted to vote for, Mark Burley. And I kind of do it based on him making 30 starts and over 200 innings every year he was a full-time starter. His last year with the Blue Jays, he missed 200 innings by four outs. And other than that, since the White Sox put him in the rotation his second year in the big leagues, he had basically never missed a start. And in the era he did that in, you know, I think that is really, really remarkable. And it offsets having a low strikeout rate, which people would hold against him. And he basically did almost all the same things that Curt Schilling did. I mean, he was a great – Schilling might be one of the best postseason pitchers ever, but, you know, Mark was a guy who took advantage of every opportunity he had, and I was really happy to vote for him.
Do you think Schilling finally gets in this year?
I have really, I know based on how close he got last year, history says he will, that if you get that close, it's not a ballot. And I don't know why this matters. It never has mattered to me. But if you look at the newcomers on this year's ballot, you know, there it's not like a year ago when you've got a lot of really impressive first time candidates. And historically that helps the case of holdovers. I don't really know why it should. You know, either a guy is a Hall of Famer or he isn't, or you feel he is and you vote your way. I don't know why it really matters who else is on the ballot unless you're just committed to voting for 10 people on the ballot, which to me is a little strange. And also, anybody that has ever heard me talk about this before or seen my ballot, I don't vote for the PED guys, and so that probably makes it easier for me to vote for fewer people, because you know, all of those guys that have stayed on the ballot so long, I just feel like it was the biggest affront to the integrity of baseball in my lifetime, and I can't overlook the character integrity clause when it comes to guys that were doing something they knew were wrong. And they hid it from others in baseball. And then ultimately it was clean players who kind of forced the union to agree to testing. So I never bought into the thing of everybody did it. I don't think that was true. I think I could probably give you some good examples, although I will say nobody knows what anybody did. And it's the standards to voting are pretty impossible on that. It's in my line there is like, 450 votes, 450 standards.
Let me ask you this. Will you ever reconsider Bonds and Clemens' case, at least? I mean, they were the best of the best when it comes to using steroids. Would you ever reconsider their cases specifically?
Only if the guidelines I'm given to vote change. And more than 10 years ago, I mean, I've reached out to the Hall of Fame's board of directors, and I've written columns and said that those guidelines are outdated and they should change. I mean, those guidelines came out in the 1960s, and they haven't been changed since then. So it doesn't address, it doesn't give voters any specifics on how you should address, you know, guys who did use the PEDs. So if the standard changed, if the guidelines changed, I would reconsider it. But, you know, I feel like anything I do, I try to follow the guidelines I'm given. So in this case, when I apply those guidelines, I don't see how you can vote for them.
What about A-Rod and David Ortiz next year? Are they in that same category?
David Ortiz is going to be a really interesting guy for me because there's nuance to him that there isn't, you know, many of these guys, including Sammy Sosa, never had a positive test. They didn't get drugged, in front of, face criminal charges like Barry Bonds did coming out of the Balco investigation. But they were linked to a positive test in the 2004 testing cycle, which was supposed to be confidential. You can say that's not fair to hold those against people, but I do use that, and you know, my thing is I can't ignore what I do know, and I can't assume what I don't know, and I feel like those guys that were reported by the New York Times, Sports Illustrated, other people to have had a positive test in that 2004 cycle. The only one that really pushed back strongly at those reports was Big Poppy, David Ortiz. And it was to the level that the Players Association with a representative of the commissioner's office actually did a news conference at Yankee Stadium one day or a media availability. I don't know what you want to call it, but they were out there to talk to reporters about that report one day when the Red Sox were in New York, and David Ortiz was pushing back strongly that he should, you know, had never done anything, shouldn't have been on any list. So I do think he pushed back stronger than anybody has against those reports. And I think I probably do have to consider that. And when I look at his production, his career, the most remarkable thing to me was like the run at the end, the last 5 to 7 years when he remained really productive, and he had lost a ton of weight and gotten in shape, almost like Jose Abreu from 5 years ago to Jose Abreu of the last 2 or 3 years. You know, I think guys reach a certain point where they realize they have to, you know, do things differently, whether it's their diet or their conditioning or whatever. And I have to give David Ortiz a lot of credit for lengthening the period of his career when he was really productive.
Do you think inadvertently you voted for someone with steroids who got in, like a Mike Piazza or Pudge Rodriguez, for example?
Oh, I don't think there's any question about that. You know, and what I would say is I voted for good cheaters. And I didn't vote for guys that got caught. And that's not exactly, you know, not a great position to be in, but I think that's the position that the Hall of Fame has put voters in by not addressing these outdated guidelines. And not, you know, I think the Hall of Fame's board of directors, long time ago, by 2010 at least, should have updated the guidelines to vote to address PEDs. But I think the political reality is, you know, nobody is more of a hanging, there's no bigger collection of hanging judges in regarding steroids than the former players that are in the Hall of Fame. And, you know, I think the Hall of Fame's board of directors, Jane Forbes Clark, is very sensitive to how the living Hall of Famers feel about situations. And those guys, you know, not being in the Hall is not enough punishment for, Johnny Bench when he looks at PED guys or, you know, and I don't, shouldn't mention Bench in particular, but any of those guys, the late Joe Morgan was an outspoken guy. There's a lot of them. And so I think by not addressing the guidelines, letting the writers be the bad cops, the policemen on the beat, the Hall of Fame's board of directors accomplishes what they want. But I, to answer your question, I don't think there's any question that we vote for good cheats, not bad cheats. And there are certain players that people will point to and say, this guy did it right. He didn't cheat. Well, we don't honestly know that. I don't think everybody was doing it, but I don't think you can really point to anybody from that era and say this guy played it clean, because we really, you know, I mean, nobody knows what goes on in bedrooms and behind closed doors. And, you know, when people bring up amphetamine use and say, well, what's the difference? There are guys that use greenies. You know, all the players that played in the 60s and early 70s were using greenies. I would point out that they used them openly, and there were in many cases jars in the clubhouse that just sat out there in the middle of the clubhouse where guys could get uppers if they had been out drinking all night, which many of them always did, to get build back up for that day's game. But they did it openly, and I don't think any of the PED guys really wanted their peers and the other players to know what they were doing. So that, you know, there might be selective cases where a handful of guys did it together, but nobody did it openly, and I think that just shows they really knew what they were doing was wrong.
What about the argument that the PED users are part of baseball history and the Hall of Fame is a museum, they deserve to be there? What do you say to that argument?
Well, the Hall of Fame's board of directors runs the Hall of Fame, which is a museum. It's the best sports museum going, I think.
Right.
And if I would be fine if the criteria for voting changed and Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire and Roger Clemens, these guys were in there, and their plaques noted, that this guy was involved. This guy was listed on the Mitchell report,
right.
You know, or this guy had the investigation with Balco or whatever it was. And that was listed along with their career hits and achievements and all of that. I would be, you know, I think that would be great. But, you know, the Hall of Fame's board of directors has to change the way they run the their museum. And, you know, I think the voters, the BBWAA members, who I still think is the best, I think that's the best, most unbiased group to have make these difficult calls. But I do think that then the BBWAA takes the burden of public criticism that probably really belongs on the Hall of Fame, because they're the ones that set the guidelines.
More to come with Bill Rogers in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Rogers, still here on Sports Talk Chicago. Bill, two more questions before we finish up. First off, your favorite player to interview as you cover the game is who?
Oh, well, over for my career, that's an easy one. It was Nolan Ryan. And he was incredibly open with what he felt about the game, you know, how he did things, you know, and he was incredibly accessible. I don't know about to every writer, but to those reporters, the beat guys that were out there on a daily basis and the guys that were really paying attention, Nolan who knew who they were. And he really worked with them, I think, to kind of communicate what it meant to be a baseball player. And I'm never going to not appreciate how he was.
And Phil, before we finish up today, last question. What's the funniest moment that you've been a part of during your career?
It's funny. We used to do these conference calls. We would share notes, and before the internet, before electronic bulletin boards, writers would be on the phone back and forth to other writers all the time. And back in the day, you would get calls from the Philadelphia Inquirer's Jason Stark, now with ESPN. And Jason started doing his Week in Review column, I don't know how long ago, 30 years ago. And he would take the worst game, if it was an 18-0 loss or something horrific had happened. His first question would be, did anybody say anything funny? And I don't know that they ever really, that in those cases they really did, or I was focusing on them. But ball players do say funny things. And one year I was covering a Texas team that started the season 0-7. And when they finally won a game, there's an infielder named Alan Bannister on the team. And back at the hotel, I was riding an elevator up to my room, and he was on the elevator, and the doors closed, and from the back of the elevator, he says, "So they said we wouldn't win one." and that cracked me up. Over 162 game season, anybody would think they wouldn't win one. But yeah, through the years, ball players say funny stuff, no doubt about it.
Well, Phil, thank you so much for joining me. Always appreciate you coming on the program, and hopefully best wishes to you as the new season comes up very soon. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Great talk there with Phil Rogers, and that'll do it for us today here on Sports Talk Chicago. Big thank you to Phil Rogers himself, Matt Dubio, WCKG, Jim DeTalb, and Tomorrow Entertainment for making this show a success. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports. And on Facebook at John Zagluel. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Another great show comes your way tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Until then, stay safe, and so long, everyone.